This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right, let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, welcome to hour number two as we roll along here on your Friday, getting ready for the wild card weekend in the National Football League. Got a little programming note. We got two interviews coming up this hour. Bonte Hill's going to join us in just a couple of minutes. He's from 95.7 The Game out in San Francisco. Good early morning wake up for him, but he's going to join us to talk 49ers, who are going to go to Dallas to face the Cowboys. We're going to talk about Jimmy Garoppolo. We're going to talk about this run-oriented deep offense. We're going to talk about their physicality. A lot of things that could be concerning to Dallas. And also, what if the Cowboys can get this game in which Jimmy Garoppolo has to beat them? Can that actually happen for San Francisco? There's not a lot of faith that that would be the case. But we'll talk to Bonte Hill, get a more in-depth look at the 49ers. Then 40 past the hour, Charlie Goldsmith's going to join us from the Cincinnati Inquirer. We're going to talk Bengals as they host the Raiders coming up this weekend, a team that has not won a playoff game since 1991, but a lot of people are liking what they're seeing from Joe Burrow in his second year, and T. Higgins, and of course, Jamar Chase, and Joe Mixon running the football. We're going to talk again to get a complete picture on the Cincinnati Bengals. That's all coming up this hour as well. We are really loaded with football coming up this weekend. And I was saying all morning that you've got some really great matchups just on paper, the way they look. You got some others that may just be completely one-sided. I think the Eagles are a fun story, but that could get out of hand down in Tampa. I think the Steelers getting to the playoffs is a great accomplishment for a team that has struggled all year, but that could be over quickly as well. I think Dallas and San Francisco could be back and forth. I think the 49ers are just enough of a pain. Even though Dallas is the number one scoring offense in the league, they make enough mistakes that could make this game interesting. A Saturday night, though, that Bills-Patriots game, as we were talking about in hour number one, I think has the most potential for me that could be really, really interesting in terms of pressure, in terms of what the meaning of the game will be. Like Sean McDermott and the Bills, going out and beating New England, beating Belichick in the playoffs would be an emotional lift. I know they don't like to talk about it, but we're all human. Imagine just sort of that feeling of beating the division rival that you always focus on throughout the season. And then you've also got, again, New England playing a playoff game without Tom Brady and Belichick without Brady for the first time in the postseason and dealing with the rookie quarterback. All of those things are on the table. But coming up next, Bonte Hill will join us. We'll talk San Francisco as we continue with Wake Up Call.
To Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us again. Loaded hour as we talk San Francisco 49ers and later on in the show, Cincinnati Bengals getting ready for their wild card matchups coming up this weekend. Niners taking on the Dallas Cowboys. Yeah, if you're kind of old school like me, you remember the early 80s with these two teams clashing when the Niners were building their dynasty and sort of exercising Dallas out of their way. In that game, in the catch when the Niners went to Super Bowl 16, and then in the 90s when both teams were one of the more dominating teams in the league, back when the NFC was really producing some really great football teams, historic football teams, they have a lot of NFC championship game appearances. So there'll be some nostalgia for this one, but obviously two teams in cut it right now in different directions. We're going to talk to Bonte Hill, 49ers, on 95.7 The Game on our Progressive Guest Line. How are you, Bonte?
What's going on, man? Good morning.
Good morning. All right, so this 49ers team had to win their last game to make the postseason. In terms of state of the team, what is this team bringing to Dallas on Sunday?
Well, they're bringing a physical brand of football, that's for sure. They're bringing a team that's won 7-9, 7 in their last 9, and basically got to have the type of ball games. And you look at the two losses they suffered, final play of the game against Seattle. Up in Seattle, they lose 33-30. They lose to Tennessee on a final possession of the game. So you're bringing a team that's coming down to Houston. They're confident, man. The defensive line is humming. Debo Samuel's having an all-world type of season. And the running game is churning. And all of a sudden, this fan base has a quiet confidence about Jimmy Garoppolo getting the job done in the playoffs. So it's a confident team coming down to Dallas, Charlie.
Yeah, let's talk about Garoppolo for a second, because there is a feeling that if the Dallas Cowboys can put this game in a situation where Jimmy Garoppolo is forced to beat them, that won't happen. What do you think about that and his play of late?
Well, I think that would be I think the Cowboys would be mistakenly stupid for thinking that, because Jimmy Garoppolo, you think back to 2019, he had the most comeback victories. You think about what he's done this year, the Cincinnati game where he blew a 20-6 lead. The Niners need two drives. They need one at the end of the fourth quarter. They need one in overtime. Jimmy Garoppolo was flawless in those situations. Just look at last week, Charlie. All right, 88 yards away from tying the football game. No timeouts in L.A. with your season on the line. And heck, let's face it, his 49ers tenure on the line. And he delivered. He delivered in a big, big way. He threw for over 316 yards with basically a broken thumb. So if the Cowboys want to go ahead and assume that, hey, let's put the ball in Jimmy G's head, we've seen Jimmy Garoppolo have some great comeback victories. He's more than capable of leading the 49ers on a comeback victory in a tight game.
All right, so let's pull away from the game for a second. Let's talk about Jimmy Garoppolo. Look, this is a guy 2 years removed from taking a team to the Super Bowl, albeit running the ball and not doing a ton. But nevertheless, he's the quarterback of a Super Bowl team, and he's got this team in the playoffs this year. What is his future there? What is going on, and what's their thought process on him today, whether that before they drafted Trey Lance?
Well, he's making, next season $26 million, right? So, are you going to have all that money tied into the quarterback room, and sit Trey Lance, despite all the draft capital the 49ers gave up to go get him?
Yeah.
Trading with the Miami Dolphins, three first-round picks, and, they moved heaven and earth for Trey Lance. The future's cloudy. I wonder, though, Charlie, if Jimmy Garoppolo goes on a run here, and say he gets to at least the NFC Championship game, that decision to move off of Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be difficult. It's going to divide this fan base, because there's a lot of Jimmy Garoppolo fans. He's well-liked inside the locker room. He's won a lot of big games. And let's face it, Shanahan has had success with Jimmy Garoppolo at quarterback. You want to throw in Brian Hoyer? Well, he was 0-6 with Shanahan. You want to throw in Nick Mullins? Or he was like 2-4-11. You want to throw in C.J. Beathard? He stunk. So if he goes on a run here, this is what the Niners would try to do. They would try to get him to move off the $26 million and see if they can restructure the deal to about maybe $12 to $14 million per. But if he goes on a run, why would Jimmy Garoppolo do that? If he goes on a run here, Charlie, he's going to be a hot commodity in the offseason, where you see quarterback openings, possibly Houston, New Orleans, New York with the Giants, Washington, you got possibly Green Bay, you have Pittsburgh, you have Denver, you may even have Miami on that list. So he's going to have a lot of suitors if he does go on a run here. So, it all depends on what happens this Sunday and next week in the divisional round.
I went to South Carolina, so I love Deebo Samuel, but talk about how threatening he can be on that offense.
When I saw Deebo at the Senior Bowl coming out of South Carolina, and I watched those Senior Bowl practices and said, oh, my Lord, I had a man crush on him immediately.
Yeah.
And usually, our favorite teams, right, Charlie, we always pick a player from college that we really, really want. And 95% of the time, I feel like we never get those players. Our teams never draft those players. They go elsewhere. But when Niners selected Deebo Samuel, I said, my God, they got a steal here in the second round. He had a big-time rookie year. Now, a lot of people forgot about him because last year was a lost season. I mean, he got Jones fracture. He suffered a Jones fracture in the offseason. He really was out of shape. He got hurt again with the foot. He had hamstring problems. He is a special, special talent. Now, do I like all the running plays that Shanahan gets dialed up for him in the backfield? Not really, because Deebo likes to finish runs with authority. He doesn't go out of bounds. The guy likes to punk people. Last week in the first quarter, he laid it on Jalen Ramsey not once but twice. He likes to punish defenders and lowers his shoulder. He sets the tone, man. 15 total touchdowns, all the receiving yards, the rushing yards. Deebo Samuel's going to be on an all-pro team, and he is a factor in this game. So if Dallas starts to take him away, look, you still have George Kittle. You still have Brandon Ayuk, who's received for over 640 yards since November. Deebo Samuel's a tall center, though. There's no doubt about that. I love me some Deebo.
You talk about the physicality of this game. Let's get to the defensive side of the ball. This is a good run defense. If Dallas is going with that double-edged sword of Ezekiel Elliott and Tony Pollard, what are they going to be going up against and what the 49ers do against the run?
Niners have had the best run defense for the last 2 months of the season. They haven't given up 100 yards on the ground, with the exception of Seattle. Up in Seattle, we know what happened in that game, the third play of the game or fourth play of the game. Seattle runs 73 yards untouched on a fake punt. You never see that happen. So the Niners' run defense is their strongest, is their specialty. They will shut you down. Last week, Sony Michel for the Rams. Look, the Rams kept trying to run it and run it and run it, and they gave Sonny Michel 21 carries. Well, guess what, Charlie? He ran for 43 yards. You want to run the ball against the 49ers? They're going to tell you to be my guest. Seriously, Nick Bosa, Eric Armstead, DJ Jones, they go about 8 to 10 deep on the defensive line, and not to mention Dre Greenlaw and Fred Warner cleaning things up at the linebacker spot. So I think if Dallas wants to win this football game, they're going to have to air that baby out. And then even that's problematic because you got Nick Bosa coming off the edge alongside Art Key. So, Dallas, I don't think they're going to have a lot of success running the football. I think they're going to have to throw this ball to win the game on Sunday.
Offensively, is this still a major run-oriented offense? Will we see a little bit of balance, or is this really run first?
Oh, it's run first. Make no mistake about it. The Niners want to beat you up in the trenches. If they can get the 40 carries a game, they'll do it. I mean, seriously, they want to run. Last week they had a drive against the Rams to tie the football game. They ran it 10 straight times.
They did, yeah.
On the drive. 10 straight times. And then Debo with the pass to Juwan Jennings for a touchdown. So that lets you know all about the 49ers. In that second half, they ran the ball 26 times against the L.A. Rams. 26 times, Charlie, in the second half. And they dominated the clock. That's what the Niners wanted to do. They want to shorten the game. They want to beat you up in the trenches. And they want to get to about 30 to 35 carries a game. But if they get to 40, they're for sure winning going away. So they are a run-first team. They love the play action pass. But make no mistake about it. This ain't the Steve Young / Joe Montana 49ers West Coast offense throwing the ball all around the yard. They want to run the ball and beat you up.
All right, Bonte Hill again, 95-7 the game in San Francisco, and the Niners helping us preview this wild card matchup with Dallas. Really appreciate your time, my friend. Thank you for getting up early with us.
Anytime, Charlie.
You got it, my man. Bonte Hill joining us. I think I did take a few little drinks there, Ron Culver. Ron called it a drinking game every time I was called Charlie. Yeah, it was pretty good. He was very energetic. Now I'm really thinking the Niners might win this game.
Yeah, why wouldn't you?
Why wouldn't I, right?
They had the best run defense the last 2 months of the season, going up against probably the best running team.
We had him on for a season preview back in August.
Yeah,
right. And that was, I don't know how to say this. He is convincing. That's the best way I can put it. I don't want to call him salesman. That's not the right word. But you know what I mean?
No,
like he is selling me on the Niners here.
Charlie, listen. He is a fan. All right. He is a fan of this team. He doesn't just report on the team, Charlie. He loves the Niners, and he loves what they're going to bring to AT&T Stadium this weekend, Charlie.
This is what we learned. Physical team, they're going to run the ball. If they can run it 40 times, they will. Dallas's run game, Tony Pollard, Ezekiel Elliott, doesn't stand a chance against that Niners run defense. And if Dak Prescott's going to throw it all over the place, Nick Bosa's coming to get you too. Jimmy Garoppolo is playing way better than people thought, even with a busted thumb. And if the Cowboys, and this is what you see a lot in sort of this thought process of this game, if the Cowboys are going to stop the run and force Jimmy Garoppolo to win the game, they have another thing coming. But can I just point out something he said at the end, just to remind people? When the Niners really needed that touchdown drive against the the LA Rams, I can't believe it. They ran the ball 10 times, and the only pass that was thrown on the drive was by Debo Samuel, not Jimmy Garoppolo. So I'm not quite sold on that one. That one is still a little out there for me, that if Jimmy Garoppolo is forced to chuck it around, that he still can beat you. I think that plays right into Dallas's hands. I think it's exactly where they're going to go. But everything else, this could be a good one Sunday afternoon at AT&T Stadium. All right, we'll continue along at this wake-up call on Sports Map Radio. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, or Charlie, whatever you want to say, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. We continue it.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. Robert on Facebook. Nice interview, Charlie. I like that, though. Can I just go by Charlie from now on? That was kind of fun. I like that.
I think there's too many Charlies in the biz.
You know what, though? I appreciate the fact that he was trying to be personal in those interviews. Listen, sometimes we get these guys on and they just go through the motions. They just answer our questions and that's it. But he was trying to kind of be together, like on this. You know what I mean? Trying to create a connection.
Now, if you were to change your name to Charlie, right? How long would it take for you to go by the name Chuck, and then we can start calling you Chuck D?
Yeah, that's true. Oh, good point. Yeah, exactly. Robert also making a good point on Facebook. David Culley's contract, heard on another Sports Map show, was 5-year contract with first two guaranteed. Yeah, I think that's right. It's 5 years, but he's getting paid for two seasons. Is that true?
I think he's... I don't know.
So he's getting paid out of the two years. So, well, here's the thing, and I want to, Frank Schwab actually pointed this out on Twitter, or Charlie Robinson, one of the Yahoo writers, wrote on Twitter that I saw yesterday. Maybe it was Charlie Schwab. Yeah, exactly. Somebody had pointed out to them, he's fine. He got paid, this amount of money for 2 years, but. One of them, and I really wish I got to find it, so I want to give him proper credit, said, imagine if you worked 40 years in a job and then you finally reached the top of the profession only to be told, here's money, go away. It's not what these guys are in it for, right? It's like when you get to a position, look, we always look at people with money and we always think it's only about money. It's not, right? Like when you reach a certain point, it is about what you're doing every single day. It's about, like, what do I have? What have I done? Where am I going in terms of your career? I don't think David Culley is fine just taking the cash and going away. He was a head coach of an NFL football team. Like, that's something that you can't take that away from him. Yeah, you know, and now it is. Now it's gone, right? It's gone. And he I'm sure, and I can't speak for him because I don't know the man, I'm sure he wouldn't mind that back. If he had a choice, if Nick Caserio sat him in a room and said, we're going to just give you this money and you can walk away after one season, or would you like to stay the head coach of the Texans? He would choose staying the head coach of the Texans, right? It's not about just getting paid out and leaving. If that was the case, Charlie Weiss would be on an island somewhere, right? These guys want to do what they're trained to do. Remember, Charlie Weiss was getting paid, I think, from 3 different organizations at one point getting paid out on his contract, right? These guys want to still be in the game. They want to still coach. So when people say, oh, it's okay, he just got a check. No, he's not okay. He got hired, and then he went to be the head coach as a filler, and then they made a public statement late in the season that they were committed to him for another year, and then they told him, oh, I'm sorry about that. Circumstances have changed. And then they let him go. And listen, I don't think David Culley was long for the Texans. I don't think this was a keep him around. The 5-year contract that he got was his agent doing his due diligence, making sure that his client was very, very well protected. But it's not just... here's a check and I'm happy. It's all right. I'll take the check because that's what you owe me, but I definitely want to do this again. So I know it's different because we're talking about millions of dollars and some of us never had millions of dollars. And so we don't relate. And we think if we had millions of dollars, our lives would be so different and whatnot. But I think it is about career growth. And I think Culley is like, no, I'd like to be the head coach of a team somewhere. So, but let's go back to the 49ers and that interview with Bonte Hill for a second, because I think he said something really interesting. The 49ers have made their bet. Trey Lance is their quarterback. He made a very good point. Jimmy Garoppolo is expensive, and they moved heaven and earth to get Trey Lance. So that this idea of keeping Garoppolo around, especially like if he goes deep into the playoffs and maybe pulls some upsets and the team gets close to a Super Bowl again, maybe they go to Lambeau Field and lose to the Packers. Maybe they upset the Packers. Who knows? But the future is with Trey Lance. That's a good point. But Garoppolo could be making himself, getting himself another job, right? Clearly, like if he continues to do this, where he's not necessarily flinging it all over the place, but he runs a pretty good offense. But I still don't buy, the idea that Garoppolo, now I'm saying all these good things about Garoppolo, but now I'm going to switch. I still don't buy his point. I don't think Garoppolo wins you this game. I just don't. I think this Cowboy defense is really good. I just don't think Garoppolo is – like, if the run game is shut down and they can't run it 40 times and they have to throw, I just don't trust it. I just don't think this is the quarterback that can go to Dallas and on his back the team will travel. I think the 49ers win in a number of ways if they do win this game. And I think it's still a hard hill to climb. I think they win this game on defense. I think getting pressure on Dak Prescott, shutting down the Cowboys' running game, which they are very, very capable of doing. They've got the top running game in one of the top run defenses in the league, the 49ers do. And they shut that down. They force Prescott to throw. They get pressure. Make the Cowboys make mistakes because they're prone to do that. We know that. But the second thing is, I think if you get that running game going and it's working and it's clicking, and Deebo Samuels and George, these two guys, Brian Ayuk is another one too. These guys are excellent at yards after the catch, right? Yards, they are really good at that. And that's a dynamic to this offense that's in play as well. Garoppolo's not going to throw it 30 yards down the field, right? Like Deebo is great at breaking tackles and initially getting that 8-yard catch into a 22-yard gain. And Kittle, we've seen that a number of years, him do that. I still think this is a good, good Dallas team that should win this game. But thanks to Bonte Hill, I am now more convinced that this game is going to be closer and more entertaining than I originally thought. See, that's why we get these guys on. And boy, when was the last guy that really came on with that sort of fan passion edge that we've had?
Well, one of our go-tos, I think, was Mark Long. With the Jaguars.
Yeah, that's right. Mark Long, really, he is another one, yeah, that really...
He doesn't hold back.
Doesn't hold back. We usually get very analytical guys that really tell us like it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I bring up Bobby Belt. He's one of the reasons he's one of my favorites.
I swear to God, he is like a groundskeeper inside AT&T Stadium
knows
or something.
Everything that is going on in that organization.
Or he's gone around and pretended that he was an IT guy and set up cameras everywhere.
I'll never forget the show we did 2020, and I'll never forget you and I were talking to him. It was midway through the season. The Cowboys were struggling, and Prescott was hurt, and we just brought him on to sort of get a state of the team. And he was giving me so much info. I remember after the interview, I said, in the era of COVID, how does he know all of this? Like, you can't get into the locker room. There's no weekly, like, you can't go to practices. You couldn't be around, like, reporters are just around all the time. And I'm like, how does he know all of this stuff within the organization?
Like, I want to say,
like, he's got moles in the organization.
I feel like maybe he's friends with Stephen Jones. I don't know. I mean, because he has information that no one should have.
Because a lot of other reporters, and this is no fault of theirs, would say things like, "Well, we don't have access to the players."
Right.
You know, we struggle getting access on what they do. Bobby never said that ever. I don't think in any time we ever said where he said, well, I don't really know because we can't talk to the players. Like, he finds a way to get that information. He's really good. But I liked his enthusiasm because I think he was selling this team as a real threat. Not that the Niners didn't have, they're not the Steelers, right? They needed to win their final game, but that's still a 10-7 football team, right? I think a 10-7.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken. Like, they just, circumstances, you know, this is the third team in the NFC West. There was just different circumstances for them than other teams.
I mean, and for us, that's not surprising because we assumed that, you know, at least three teams were coming out of the NFC West. We even had an argument for a while. It was like, hey, we can see a way that all four teams make it.
Yeah, exactly. So this, again, this is a good football team. Again, circumstances just made it so that they had to win, but they had a good winning record. They closed out the season very strong. They've got a lot of great things about what they do that could work for them. And Dallas, the one thing that we talk about with the Cowboys is they can be really shaky. And in a one-game playoff, when you're shaky, we've seen excellent teams at home lose. And that's where you got to be careful. Dak can't throw a pick. You know, they can't fumble the ball and get into a turnover battle. And they can't panic when their offense is stalling out early, if indeed that happens. Those are some of the keys. The pressure's on the Cowboys, but the pressure's also on the Niners, too. But Dallas, especially at home, this 49er team can be a pest. I still think Dallas wins, but they can be a pest. We'll talk Bengals next as they get ready for the Raiders.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, let's go back to the Progressive guest line. Progressive, making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Charlie Goldsmith's joining the Cincinnati Inquirer on the Bengals. They host the Raiders coming up this weekend, looking for their first playoff win since 1991. How are you, Charlie?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Good. All right, let's just get this out of the way first. Health-wise, how's the team looking? I know they sat out some guys. Obviously, they didn't really need to. You know, they didn't have to play, but some of them were banged up. What is the health of the situation of the Bengals heading into this game?
The only thing I got for you is that the Bengals' fourth-string defensive tackle will be out with an MCL injury.
Nice.
But aside from that, everyone else is ready to go.
All right, let's talk about Joe Burrow, because we look at rookie quarterbacks, and then we say, okay, they're developing. And then in year two, we wonder, hey, is there going to be a sophomore slump? Now, for Burrow, he was injured in his rookie season, but the sophomore slump didn't come. How has he progressed as an NFL quarterback since his arrival in Cincinnati 2 years ago?
The progress is truly remarkable, because he was coming off an ACL injury. And we saw in real time Burrow gain more confidence in his knee. In the first couple weeks of the season, he was a little more stationary, effective, but not yet as dynamic and explosive as he could be. Now he's literally the most dynamic and explosive quarterback in the NFL. Looking at metrics like yards per attempt and 40-yard passes down the field, he now is maybe as comfortable as anyone except for Patrick Mahomes at extending the play outside the pocket, making a defender miss as he scrambles, keeping his eyes down the field, and slinging it 40 yards to an open wide receiver. That progress has been truly remarkable, and it's been what's made Burrow a top five quarterback in the NFL right now.
We know about Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins as well. These offensive weapons, kind of evaluate them for us as they get ready for the Raiders.
When the Bengals hired Zach Taylor, his vision for the offense is that you win with elite skill position players. And I don't think there's another team in the NFL that's invested as much as the Bengals. A top five pick, the first pick of the second round, Tyler Boyd's on a top 25 contract for receivers in the NFL, plus Joe Mixon, who's one of the 10 highest paid running backs in the league. Overall, they've all had their moments. They've all had their games where they've been, you know, to put a word to it, like AFC Offensive Player of the Week candidates. They've all had their moment in the sunlight, and the versatility and the dual and the multiplicity of the Bengals offense is what makes it so hard to stop.
You know, it's interesting, because I want to go back to the draft for a second. There was so many people like Penei Sewell, and then Ja'Marr Chase are like, well, they need, look what happened to Joe Burrow. They need offensive line. Well, how did that pick go down at the time? I mean, it's easy to look back now, but at the time, how did that go down with the fan base?
Yeah, I remember at the time, you know, when the odds came out in September of who the most likely first coach was to be fired, that was Zach Taylor.
Yeah.
It wasn't because of the Chase pick, but everyone was saying, all right, this is the vision you have for the offense. If it doesn't work, if you're wrong, and if a deep threat and yards after catch threat like Chase isn't what the offense needs to make Burrow more dynamic, if you get that wrong, Zach Taylor, his hot seat is warming up even more. Zach Taylor didn't just get it right. He found one of the best rookie wide receivers in NFL history, someone who's completely changed the offense, and they've kind of found other ways to mitigate the offensive line, but the offense works in large part because of Chase.
You know, it's interesting because, you know, quarterbacks and wide receiver combinations come out of nowhere. You can have veteran quarterbacks with young guys, young quarterbacks with veteran wide receivers. But these two guys played together in college. How has that worked for them as they've now moved on to the next level of their careers?
I'll give you one play. There was in the middle of December, they played the 49ers. And it was late. It was the last minute of the fourth quarter. And Joe Burrow runs out of the pocket, extends the play for 6, 7, 8, 9 seconds. Ja'Marr Chase is cutting to the left in the back of the end zone. Him and Burrow make eye contact from 30 yards away. Chase figures out, oh, I'm going to turn, and Burrow's going to get the ball there, and I know exactly what to do here because they literally ran the exact same play when LSU played Georgia a couple of years earlier.
Wow.
It's moments like that where you point to the chemistry and the connection that's real.
What is it about the Raiders? Now, they're coming in with a little bit more urgency because that's the way they've had to live the last few weeks of the season with win, you know, losing out, win, get in. What is it about the Raiders that could be troubling for Cincinnati?
Max Crosby, he's the leader in pressures in the entire NFL. He'll be matching up against the right tackle the Bengals have, and Isaiah Prince, who is a backup, not just a backup, literally the last guy to make the team on the 53-man roster in training camp. A guy who barely had any NFL experience before the season. He had to bump up the depth chart when the Bengals right tackle Riley Reiff got hurt. the Bengals have gotten better at giving their tackles help in pass protection with running backs and tight ends helping out. But overall, I mean, that's a tough matchup for an unproven right tackle playing his first real substantial playing time going up against one of the best edge rushers in football.
I've been saying this season in all the years that I've been following teams and covering teams. I spent a lot of time in Denver, but, you know, I obviously paid attention to what was going on with teams like Cincinnati. Carson Palmer teams, Andy Dalton teams, I liked them, but I never felt that they were really, really dangerous or scary. I got a different feeling about this team. How do you analyze the way this season has gone for them?
What you just said, I think, would perfectly describe how any Bengals fan in Cincinnati that I've spoken to feels right now. The difference is Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow is the first person who I know who walked into an NFL team as a rookie and was a captain from week one. Burrow immediately took over the locker room, immediately took over the offense, and has just become more vocal and more of a presence and more of a leader. And he has skins on the wall. He's won on the big stage to kind of back that mentality and that confidence up. And it's kind of like everyone's just following his lead right now. Burrow has set the tone not just for the franchise, but for a city that hasn't won a playoff game in 31 years. But yeah. Burrow is so different that's not really mattering to people right now, and that's a very interesting dynamic to pay attention to.
All right, let's get to the defensive side of the ball. What do they do good? What do they have trouble with?
Yep, they're a top five defense against the run. They have the highest paid nose tackle in football, a bunch of really good tacklers, and two outside corners who are playing at an extremely high level right now. What they've struggled with is against tight ends. The Raiders have a star at that position in Darren Waller, who had 116 receiving yards in the first matchup between these teams. The Bengals have basically thrown the kitchen sink over the course of the season, trying to figure out everything they can to do better against those matchups. And how the Bengals try to stop Waller, I think that's going to be the determining matchup on that side of the ball.
Let's talk about Zach Taylor, because you brought up a really good point about sort of the feeling that he would be let go, and now he's got this team in the playoffs and winning the AFC North. Let's talk about his growth at that position. Obviously, it's great to have a quarterback, and you need one. If you don't have one, you're out. But how has he developed as a coach? What has he learned over the last couple of years?
Two things. First, situationally, you know, what do you do when it's fourth and five from the seven, you know, and you're in the red zone? Do you go for it or do you kick the field goal? Zach Taylor has spoken about specific mistakes he made in situations like that against, like, the Seahawks in the first game he coached, against the Steelers in his first month as a head coach. He's even made a couple mistakes this season that he has fully admitted to. But I've been able to track literally learning from kind of the issues that have come up when they've been in similar situations. They feel very confident that they picked the right answer and that they've learned from those mistakes. Like, for example, against the Chiefs, they went for it on fourth and one, and it was a season of franchise-changing decision that changed everything. And then the second thing is the offense, as I mentioned earlier, is more multiple than it ever has been. It took 3 years for Taylor to really pin down and install what he was looking for, specifically in the run game. They have exactly that this season. It's the identity they kind of been waiting for. And that all came together once they had enough time and gotten the right personnel this season.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a second. And again, we're talking to Charlie Goldsmith, Cincinnati Bengals, from the Cincinnati Inquirer. How important is Joe Mixon to the offense?
It's not just Joe Mixon. Joe Mixon is incredibly important. He's second in the AFC in rushing yards. But the Bengals changed offensive line coaches this year. Frank Pollock, who brought in a brand new wide zone run scheme. And that specifically pairs perfectly with, one, Mixon's style, and two, the passing attack as well, to where they're able to use more play action stuff. They're able to use more variety in the run game. They're running outside zones, inside zones, gap schemes, toss plays, jet sweeps. They have more they can do, which is different, and that's really helped Mixon have the best year of his career.
Is there a concern, and a lot of it, you know, hey, look, it's a reset. I get it when you get to the postseason. But is there a concern that there have been moments where this team has looked so good and scary, but then they've regressed at times? Is there a concern about that dynamic with this team?
For sure, and the concern has been pinpointing the slow starts that you were alluding to. Those 95% of the time have been because of turnovers. And there is a concern that you can't turn the ball over in this situation. In the Bengals' defense, Burrow hasn't thrown a pick over the last month. The Raiders ranked dead last in the NFL with just 6 interceptions this season. No one has more than one on the team. It's usually been interceptions that have set the Bengals back when they've had these slow starts and fallen behind. And the Raiders don't quite have that path to do that against the Bengals.
Charlie, great stuff. I really appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us. And, again, it should be a good one coming up on Saturday. I really appreciate it.
Talk to you soon.
You got it. Charlie Goldsmith, again, Cincinnati Enquirer, on the Bengals, who will take on the Raiders. That is the first game out of the gate. A team that has not won a playoff game again since 1991. But I just get a feeling this is just different. I love the way Joe Burrow is playing. But, look, we said when they beat the Ravens, when the Ravens were the Ravens earlier this season, 41-17, and then they lost to the Jets. And then they followed it up getting blown out by the Browns. But they beat the Raiders this season 32-13. These are two teams, you know, go to the playoffs. You can sometimes throw that out, but there's sometimes that's an indication. All right, we'll come back, talk more of the postseason as we continue. It's Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Well, you know, not to pump us up, Ron, but that was a fun hour of two good interviews of information we got to dissect. Vontae Hill of the 49ers, Charlie Goldsmith of the Bengals. I like Charlie. It sounded good.
Well, I'm all up the Bengals.
Are you in?
Yeah, you know, if you're... Do you root for division rivals to win?
Oh, can I, for example?
Yeah.
Not really, but...
Who would you rather... You know, we're kind of in a similar situation. Would you rather see the Raiders win or the Bengals?
See, I don't really dislike the Bengals. The Browns are more anti... Ravens, I definitely don't like.
Yeah.
But the Browns I don't like, but the Browns are just not have been a thorn in the Steelers' side for the 20 years that they've come back in existence. So I'm not really. But the Bengals have never. I don't know. And the Steelers have played the Bengals in the playoffs a few times and beat them. But I don't know. I like Joe Burrow. I still think his story is remarkable. I mean, it was remarkable. You know, there's a movie out about the Kurt Warner story, which is fun. And I told my wife, I said, I'm not going to go see it. She asked me if I was going to go see it. And I said, I guess I will see it if it's like free, like if it's on, you know, one of the services I paid
for.
Yeah,
it will be. Just be patient.
I might see it. I'm not going to the theater to see it because I saw that play out in real time. You know,
yeah.
That is not history to me that I don't know or wasn't alive with. I saw that play out in real time. So to me, the real story of Kurt Warner was better. Joe Burrow, I think his story is fascinating. Now, he wasn't bagging groceries and kind of on the back end of a career, like where didn't look like it was going to work out. Burrow just needed a new college location, right? And he found it in LSU. And look at what he's done since, like, I don't know where I'm going to play college football, to, all right, I guess I'll play at LSU. What that has opened up the door for him to do. Right. 2 years into the league, he's got one of the most explosive teams in the playoffs. He is coming off an ACL injury where he didn't even get to finish his rookie season. He won a Heisman. He won all the quarterback awards. He won championship.
Can make an argument that he's the MVP.
You could make the argument.
It's a very loose one.
It's a loose one, but he could be in the conversation.
Yeah.
If you were doing one of those hour-long ESPN shows where they're like, we're going to break down all the MVP candidates, then you'd have to include him in the conversation to get to the inevitability that it's probably Aaron Rodgers.
Or Tom Brady. It's going to be one of those two. But, I mean, you know, I'm looking at it this way. Like, if I was to pick five players and, like, you know, if you're voting – and there's like, you know, choose five players. I think you'd be one of my five.
Right, exactly. Just like, again, when he won the Heisman and everybody knew he won the Heisman, we still needed runner-ups to complete the ESPN show, right? Like, same kind of thing. You would say, yeah, you would be on the round table. You would be in that discussion if we were sitting around tossing around ideas.
He would be invited to the awards ceremony.
Uh-huh, exactly. So he would be invited to the awards ceremony. Exactly. Even if he wasn't going to win it. But I reiterate, I think this is the most dangerous Cincinnati Bengals team I've seen in my lifetime. I want to say the Boomer Esiason in the 80s were pretty good. Ken Anderson and the Bengals were pretty good when they would play you in freezing cold Riverfront Stadium. But I think this is one of the most dangerous teams, the way they can score and score quickly. And I like the fact that I like that story he told about Burrow and Chase connecting through eye contact. Like that, again, Montana and Rice, you know, you look at the greater quarterback to receiver combinations in the history of the NFL, right? They can develop in a variety of different ways, right? Young, old, both young, both old, whatever. But we don't really see young, we played in college together, right? Like that connection is kind of cool. And I'm glad he told that story. That was kind of neat because they ran that same play against Georgia. They ran that same route in Cincinnati and scored a touchdown. That was kind of a cool story. Because, again, they're a scary team, man. They are because how quickly they can turn a game around. I mean, Kansas City was controlling that contest. Well, they looked like they were going to run away with that. But the Bengals stayed true to themselves, got back into that game, and then put more and more pressure on Kansas City and then ended up winning it. So, again, but Raiders can get spunky too, so we'll see how that goes. But, yeah, you're curious. So we had two guys on again selling us their teams in the 49ers and the Cincinnati Bengals.
That's my pick for the Super Bowl now.
The 40. Oh, that would be a three-time Super Bowl.
How great would that be?
Three times. That would be Pittsburgh Dallas like.
Yes.
Yeah, because the Steelers and the Cowboys met three times in the Super Bowl. The Bengals and the 49ers, Super Bowl 16 was one of the most watched. I think it still holds the record as the most watched Super Bowl, but I'm not sure. I think it's been passed, to be honest with you. But for a long time, as far as percentage of houses in the country, it was the highest rated Super Bowl for a long time. And then Super Bowl 23 was the John Taylor catch down in Miami that won those 49ers beat the Bengals again back in the January of 1989. So, yeah, that would be fun. Unlikely, but fun.